Well, Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe was the best-selling novel of the 19th century. It is an anti-slavery novel. It helped lay the groundwork for the Civil War. Well, in a moment, we will talk with Thomas Berg about his latest work, Uncle Tom's Classroom. It's not about the races, but it is about entrapment. It is about slavery, how one public school teacher awakened his students to the cosmic super self within. What's happening to our young children in school right now? And what has happened to you? Thomas Berg is next on Coast to Coast AM. Thomas Ellenberg has devoted 40 years of his life to the public schools. Tom discovered his love for education while serving the American government as a Peace Corps volunteer in Venezuela and a Teacher Corps volunteer in San Francisco's Mission District. He was hired by the San Francisco Public Unified School System in 1971 and taught every grade from K through 8 up until 2005, when he retired from active duty in 2005 to complete his opus, Uncle Tom's Classroom. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hey, great, George. Thank you for calling. Good hearing from you.
You know, I've got to let you know that many years ago, my late uncle, who lived in Massachusetts, sent a lengthy letter to then-Senator John F. Kennedy telling him about trying to form an organization that we believe was then formed called the Peace Corps.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
His name was Frederick Baho, and he chronologically laid out a plan at how, you know, volunteers could help people around the world way before anybody was really doing it. And I think Kennedy bit with it, didn't he?
You know, I actually saw John and Jackie a few weeks before Dallas. It was really synchronistic. And he called upon those of us. I was at the University of Pittsburgh, and he said, we want to start sending Americans out as peace emissaries. Because remember, that was the day of the ugly American.
That's right.
Right. And I saw him. I swear he looked like he was glowing when he said it. And I knew at that moment I had to go into the Peace Corps. So, in fact, one of my prized possessions right now is a letter I got from Bobby Kennedy in 1968. When I was writing back and forth with him, telling him how I thought it was really going, you know?
I got to tell you, Tom, when they both got assassinated,
mm-hmm.
5 years in between, I got to tell you, this country still has not healed from that.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. I think you were talking earlier. I've been listening to your first hour. By the way, I love the song you chose.
Leading
school.
Into You?
Yeah.
Yes, I had to do that.
Because one of my campaigns, one of the things I would really like to do, and they've already done it in other parts of the world, is to really take a good hard look at the grading system and the damage it does to all of the kids that go through all of the they go through 12 grades, and they're told that they're C and D and F students.
I had a teacher once, Tom, who, mm-hmm. and we're going to reminisce a lot about all this stuff tonight.
Great.
But he called us all into the class, first day.
Mm-hmm.
We're all in there sitting down, must have been 7th, 8th grade. And he said, just want all of you to know, you all have A's right now.
All right.
All of you. If you can keep it up, mm-hmm. you will have A's on your report card at the end of the semester.
Mm-hmm.
It's yours to lose. And he started out. He showed us. He showed us a chart. You know, my name, George Norrie, A. So-and-so, mm-hmm. A. Linda, A. All of us. We all had A's. And we were in shock after that.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of us realized what he was trying to tell us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, looking back, that guy was brilliant because he motivated people. You know, rather than say, you know, like you just said, you're a C student, you're failing. He put us all on an even par, and he put us on the top.
So you knew that you had the potential to be a cosmic super self. You were not put down at the very beginning. There are some brilliant, dedicated teachers out there. Really, I mean, really fantastic teachers. And I had the same kind of teachers that inspired me to become a teacher.
And that's important, because your book, Uncle Tom's Classroom, is not a knock against good education.
No, it's a celebration. In fact, It's a redefinition of the very word education.
And tell me about the tie-in. Uncle Tom's Classroom, Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Yeah, really.
You know, we're not dealing with a racial issue here.
No, we're not.
But people who would see the title might think, hey, what's this all about?
Well, I have always loved teaching. My mom was a teacher. I have family that founded Slippery Rock State Teacher College. So I have basically lived in the public school system my entire life. And I love it. And hello, APG&E Middle School. Hello, Meadville High School. I mean, I have people listening right now at different schools that I love. And, you know, it's so no, this is not in any way an indictment of public education. What it is, it's what Harriet Beecher Stowe did. I would like people to take a look at what education does to kids, mainly kids who are not the jocks and the athletes and not the A students, but the kids that end up being the C, D, and F students. And what that does, it really basically terrorizes them, number one.
Sure. They're not very popular in school,
right? And they begin to lose their sense of why they're here. You were talking with your previous guest about mind, body, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It squelches, it really basically kills their spirit, because if you keep telling kids year after year, you're a C student, you're a loser, by the time, you know, they're in high school, they've almost given up.
You had, as a youngster, some very mystical, paranormal-type experiences, which helped shape you, didn't
really?
You? Tell me about this.
I would say that they're really far out, but, you know.
On this program, Tom, nothing is far out.
Do you know what? I have a statue that I got in New York after 9/11. Of the Statue of Liberty I'm looking at right now. And do you realize you are holding up the torch of what I consider to be real liberty? And I always put a sign in front of my classroom, free speech allowed.
Yep.
And that's what you represent. It's just great that you allow people of all viewpoints and really far out viewpoints to share in a respectful, you know, environment. I just totally respect. You are really, truly exemplifying the real meaning of liberty and free speech.
Well, you know, I got an email months ago from someone who said, how could you put that person on? You know what? I don't agree with that person. How could you do that?
Right.
And so I sent them back a very polite email and said, you know, because you don't agree with them, does that one make you right and them wrong? And
really?
Two, don't they have a right to say how they feel?
Really?
And the person sent me back another email and said, well, you know what? You're right.
Right.
And that's what we try to do on the program.
Right, right,
you know,
right.
Give people that opportunity. I don't agree with everything that everybody says, but at least they have a right to say it, and people listening have a right to accept it or not.
Well, you know, the whole political landscape right now, everybody's talking about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I always talk to my kids about that liberty meant that you can read what you want to read, you can say what you want to say, you can discuss what you want to discuss, because we are all one, like Abraham Lincoln said, you know, united, we are great, divided, we will fall. And so one of the principles that I taught, and one of the reasons why I decided to name the book Uncle Tom's Classroom, was because you get into a lot of trouble when you're in the system and you allow children to bring, like, say, the Bible to read for free reading.
Though they should be able to if they want to.
I let them.
Of course.
They used to hide. I had Jewish kids reading the Talmud. I had Catholic kids reading their catechism. I had Christian evangelicals reading their St. James Bible.
Would you let Muslims read the Quran?
Yes.
Good for you.
Well, I had to read part of the Quran, too, to see, you know, what they were reading. But what it turned out was I allowed them then, as long as they were respectful, you know, I allowed them to share their ideas from what I called my podium time. I would give them time to share their ideas. And so we basically did in the classroom what you are doing with your radio show. We began to share ideas, and we created a polemic, like an open debate. But we had to keep it secret, basically, because we were supposed to follow the state-mandated curriculum.
Well, you did it right. And what's so unfortunate worldwide, these fanatics on all ends of the spectrum who just won't let people worship the way they want to, think the way they want to. I mean, it's amazing. They either, you know, try to behead you for something because you don't do what they want, or, you know, if you aren't their religion, they go crazy. And that's got to change. And that's got to change from the school kids.
Well, you know where it's going to change? It's going to change from our generation waking up enough to realize that when you try to educate children out of mind, body, and spirit, when you tell them that they're only worker bees and they're only supposed to be, they're only supposed to follow a certain very narrow, you know, way of being in the world, and you don't even allow them to ask basic questions like, why am I here? Which gets back to your question, because as a little boy, I had amazing experiences that showed me that there were many, many higher dimensions, which I call like cosmic consciousness and divine dimensions, numerous ones, which I talk about in the book. And so as I was teaching the state curriculum, this was during the 70s, I began to feel like a hypocrite. I began to realize that I was enslaved along with the kids, because I was allowed to have policemen and nurses and doctors come in and talk on career day, but I was not allowed to tell them that I was having a spiritual life.
That's disappointing, wasn't it?
Well, thank God I was in San Francisco and I worked for wonderful principals and people who were on spiritual paths, and I had a lot of support all the way up to the superintendent here to try things that had never been tried. I was given tremendous freedom over the last 30 years. It's just, it's a wonderful place to live because you have a lot of people trying to wake up spiritually and giving everybody the option to do it on their, in their own path.
Let's jump ahead for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And in writing this book with the very important subtitle, How One Public School Teacher Awakened His Students to the Cosmic Super Self Within.
All right.
What have you seen wrong with the education system that got you to do this book?
Well, that's it. That's why I put in the subtitle, because I saw, okay, when you teach, well, first of all, like I had these, I had a out-of-body experience when I was like about 5 years old. When I was a baby, I could remember, I know this sounds far out, but I was a baby and I could remember language. I could remember thinking in languages. And I remember the moment where my higher self said, no, you're too young to think in language, you know, and I knew that I had been reincarnated. I knew from the very beginning I'd been reincarnated. So I remembered. I've never forgotten some of my past lives. And so my whole youth was a variety of experiences that showed me that there was this incredible dimension of consciousness, which, of course, as Catholics, we called God, you know.
Right.
And it was the most important power at work in my life, my whole life. That's how I got in the Peace Corps. You know, I know it was divine intervention. And I've had many experiences like that. And so I decided to name the book Uncle Tom's Classroom with that subtitle, Cosmic Super Self, because I realized that the kids were being denied the truth about who they really were, which was, in fact, disempowering them and turning them into slaves.
By design?
No, I don't think, I honestly do not think most people involved in the school system are even aware of the design. And, you know, you've had a lot of guests on. I don't know how high it goes. You know, I don't know where the plan comes from, and I don't want to go there right now.
Or how far down it filters.
Or how far down the rabbit hole we need to go, right? But I do know that as the decades progressed, the 70s were pretty free. The 80s were also pretty free. The 90s were the freest. We had what was called shared decision making. We were given a lot of freedom.
But then what happened?
And then No Child Left Behind came, and what happened was everything turned towards the tests. And the minute everybody's focus turned towards the tests, we were given, literally, the last 2 years I was teaching, I was given scripts to follow by the reading textbooks. I mean, it was getting to the point where we didn't even have any freedom to even speak our own mind at all. I mean, we were given scripts. So it was starting to get so incredibly enslaving that that's why I decided I had to retire early and write the book to see what I could do. My purpose is to open the cultural conversation, to open the conversation.
What was the name of the movie? And I just ran into him, Morgan Freeman. What was the name of the movie that he was a principal? He was in charge of a school that was in an inner city, and he turned it around. I'll get the name of it, but it was dramatic with what he did. It was a true story. He was portraying somebody.
One of the movies that I used was the Jaime Escalante story. Are you familiar with him?
No, tell me about that.
Jaime Escalante was a Latino Mexican-American guy in L.A., and he was assigned to a really dilapidated school.
That might be the character he played.
Yeah, we might be talking about the same movie. I can't remember the title either, but he started out by saying, hey, you kids have math in your blood. You know, you're Maya, you're Aztec, you know math. And he got those kids scholarships. He taught them calculus, and they got scholarships, and they were able to work themselves out of the ghetto because he brought forth their cosmic super self. He brought forth their highest intelligence. In fact, that's the original. That's what the Greeks meant by education. Education means to draw forth the spiritual high essence of each being. That's what education really means.
They were one of the worst graded kids, I think, in the district. And
right.
They just zoomed, right?
Right. They didn't even have computers, right? That was in the 80s, right? Yes.
That is something.
So, when you begin to talk to kids I'm talking to your cosmic super self now, they like, oh, whoa. Like what you said with your teacher, you know, somebody gets it, that they're more than just a little, you know, poor little kid forced to sit in a wooden seat for 5 hours a day and be programmed, you know, into certain very narrow belief systems.
Now, when you were putting together this work, what was the message you wanted to get people to accept here and understand?
That, in fact, it clarified after 9/11 because, you know, there was such terror in the air. As you know, we all went through it. And I realized I had this incredible series of epiphanies that we were my middle school's huge. It's like 1,800, a lot of kids, the largest in the city. And at that point, I realized that many of us, without realizing it, that's why I call myself an Uncle Tom teacher too, were using terror to control the kids, to force the kids into our standardized curriculum. And I decided, with the support of my good girlfriend, Barbara, who's listening, that I was going to become like the French underground, and I was going to find a way to bring freedom of thought and freedom of expression and freedom of, you know, Joseph Campbell's idea of following your bliss.
Right.
At that point, I said, I'm going to spend the last few years of my career allowing kids as much freedom as they can handle. And do you know, the more freedom I gave them, the less I had to discipline them.
Amazing. And by the way, the Morgan, I got to tell you this because we'll go crazy. He played Joe Clark.
Okay.
The movie was Lean on Me. That was with Morgan Freeman. And I think the one you were talking about, the person who played, was Edward James Olmos.
Absolutely. That's it.
Played that character.
You're right. Yes.
So they're out there. We're going to take this quick break, and then we're going to come back with you, Tom, and really get into your work here and what it means to a lot of people. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Absolutely, and you can become a Coast Insider, a Streamlink member, by going to coasttocoastam.com and pick up your downloads and your podcasting and your apps, and pretty soon you've got your iPhone app already, Android and BlackBerry, now right around the corner. More to come in the next few weeks. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Thomas, how is the curriculum set? Is it done state by state for schools?
Oh, you know, that's a really, really good question. When I became a teacher, it was a lot less, controlled. We had a lot more freedom back in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s. The freedom kept diminishing. Like I was saying, once No Child Left Behind came in and everything became about the tests, people began to focus on only the standardized curriculum. We were told what to teach, by the hour, by the day.
Cookie cutter.
Yeah, by the topic. I got it. In fact, you've really changed my life in the last couple of days. Ever since you started talking about me in my book, I've heard from teachers around America.
Really?
Yeah.
And we didn't even start yet.
I know. We didn't even start yet.
Wait till tomorrow.
I hope it starts a movement. I do. I do. I really do. Because there are a lot of teachers out there that love teaching and love kids. I mean, I spent my whole life teaching with kids. And it was so hard. I had a principal named Joe Crivello. Hi, Joe. He's listening. Who told me when he hired me to teach 6th, 7th, and 8th grade at APG&E Middle School. He said, I can tell you're really smart. You have a lot of great ideas. I'm going to give you freedom. I'm going to let you develop your curriculum. As long as you make sure the kids are prepared for the test, I'm going to let you do it. And we did things like we took kids to Hawaii, Alaska, the Navajo Indian Reservation. I mean, we took the freedom and we ran with it. And we were the best school in California. I mean, it was terrific having freedom. But then when No Child Left Behind came and the whole shift turned into highly competitive, highly controlled, it got to the point where we were told to put on the blackboard the exact number of the curriculum strand that had been designated as what we were supposed to teach that semester by Sacramento and I guess Washington. I'm not sure how high it goes, but we were told the last 10 years I taught just about everything we were supposed to teach.
The books itself that are selected for the classrooms, mm-hmm. school board or state level? Who picks them?
Well, I could tell you stories about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could tell you stories about that. It's like people are making lots of money off of big, heavy new textbooks that
they force feed to a district, right?
Right. And they're big, they're heavy.
And expensive.
People are making lots of money off it. The parents have to buy them, and in some cases, anyway. And
definitely for college.
And you know, your heart goes out to these little sixth graders. They're weighted down with homework, with these big, thick textbooks, you know, and they're literally hurting their backs carrying these heavy, heavy, heavy books. So basically, what I did was starting in the early 90s. I made a deal with every single class that I had. I said, as long as you do the homework, as long as you prepare for the test, because you can't get out of that. We have to play the game. You have to pass the test. You know, we'll have as much possible creative and curricular freedom in the classroom as we possibly can. And so we did everything we could to make sure the kids were prepared, you know, to handle the test. But I made sure that they had as much freedom as they possibly could to develop their own curriculum. I mean, these kids are smarter than we are.
Do you think the school board members who have authority with regards to some of the books that enter that particular district even read these books?
That's a good question.
They're like senators and congressmen who don't read the bills.
Right, I know. And it's like, so much of it, I mean, so much of it is unnecessary, I mean, and slanted, you know, so much of it is slanted in a direction of basically the message that's behind it all is you are going to have to compete, and you're going to, this is basically the message I sense, not art, you know, not PE, but, you know, the actual curriculum. The curriculum basically says, you know, you're going to be in a highly competitive society and you're going to have to fight your way to the top and you're going to have to either be a really good athlete or you have to be a really good people pleaser, you know, and please the people. You have to really do this curriculum really right and then you'll be, you know, you'll succeed in society. But if you don't, then you'll have to work at Walmart the rest of your life. And most of the kids don't graduate with all A's and B's.
That's right.
The majority graduate with C's, D's, and F's. And so what we're doing with, and I don't think most people are aware of it at all, is that when we send a kid out into the world, you know, 12th grade, if even, you know, like President Obama said, how come everybody's like dropping out of school? Really?
Yeah.
Go into a high school, you'll find out what
huge numbers
are dropping.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, I was lucky. I had some great teachers.
Me too.
I mean, they made it exciting. My chemistry teacher was fun. My physics teacher was fun. My English teacher was fun. The only one who wasn't fun was my history teacher, who was just like Ben Stein, who played the economics professor in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, wow. I remember that movie.
He was that bad.
Right.
I mean, you would walk into that class, and it would be deadly boring. And you know what? But, you know, you wanted to find a teacher who would reenact things and make history exciting.
Right.
He didn't do that. He was deadly. But by and large, I was pretty lucky. My teachers were good. I had a music teacher and a drama teacher, and they pushed me, and they kept pushing me into the field I kept going into. And, I was lucky. I was lucky that I had good teachers who motivated people and kids. Does that happen nowadays, generally?
Oh, absolutely. I don't believe in luck. We were blessed. I too was blessed with some teachers that said basically what became my educational philosophy is find your talent, find your passion, find your bliss, like Joseph Campbell said, and follow it, and I'll help you. You know, I'll help you follow your passion. And if there was more of that, and there is a lot of that here. I mean, I think that the Bay Area here is a cauldron of experimentation right now. I don't know what's going on around the rest of the country, but a lot of teachers are doing what your teachers did, which is to find out, allow a child early on to find out what's your passion, what's your talent.
How close are you to San Leandro?
You know what? I haven't had a car for about 5 years since I retired, so it's like I think it's a BART ride away. That's your UFO concert.
I'm there Saturday at the Bell Theater. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you pop on the BART, come on by.
Can you get over there by BART?
I don't know.
Oh, well, I guess the whole rest of the country doesn't care about that. We can talk about it later. But you know what? Kids, one of the things this brings up are Halloween, you know? I started a thing in Halloween where I told kids, you know what? I know something about you because I saw spirits when I was your age. So for Halloween, you can come in and you can tell stories about your experiences, your metaphysical, mystical experiences. The first year it started out one day. By my like ninth year of Halloween, it would take like 4 days. I would have so many kids sign up to come to the podium and tell their stories. And I mean, kids are seeing UFOs. They are seeing what they consider to be multidimensional beings. They're seeing spirit guides. They're seeing guardian angels. They're seeing Jesus.
Yes.
They're seeing all kinds of things. And almost every single kid that spoke from the podium said, my parents told me not to talk about this.
That most parents will try to inhibit a child from saying stuff like that.
Did you have experiences too as a child?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, right.
It's unbelievable. That's what fueled my desire to get into broadcasting. I went into broadcasting for the sole reason of wanting to investigate the paranormal, the mysteries, and the strange.
Well, then I got to tell you, I got off a little topic here when you asked me about what paranormal experience I had as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I had something happen to me. I've actually written an article about it for Science of Mind magazine that totally convinced me in the power of prayer and the power of intention.
What happened?
And it's historically documented in the newspapers of Meadville, Pennsylvania, where I grew up. It was French Creek Valley. We were in a low-lying neighborhood, and we were having a really bad spring flood. And we just moved into our beautiful house. My dad was just a factory worker, but he did everything he could to raise us middle class, you know?
Yeah.
And we just bought this beautiful ranch house by the river, by Cassawaga Creek. And little did we realize that it was flood prone. And he, you know, back in the 50s, everybody wanted to get wall-to-wall carpeting. So my mom and dad, we bought this new house, and they put in wall-to-wall carpeting, and the flood hit like in 2 weeks. And the flood rose really, really high, and the next thing we knew, it was surrounding our house. And so my dad's, well, we had to evacuate. And my mom and my sister and I are, you know, we had paper bags and the dogs, and we're wading out across the lake that's around our house. And my dad announces, I am going to stay in the house, and I'm going to pray, and I'm going to show you that God will save our house. And so he stayed. And the flood is like 5 inches from coming into our house, right? Yeah. And so and I'm like 11 years old, really spiritual. I mean, I sensed spiritual entities. And we climbed a hill, went to our neighbor's house, and I fell asleep praying. And I woke up early in the morning, and it was all white outside the windows of our neighbor's house. And I looked at my house, it was just all white, light everywhere. And so I put on my coat and I ran down the hill. What had happened, and this is historically documented, I mean, it's unbelievable even to this day, but it changed my life because I knew that there was a power at work, a power of good at work in the universe that was involved in all of our lives. The flood had frozen 1 inch below our floorboards, solid. The entire flood turned into a lake of ice.
Jeez.
I know. And I went in, and my dad is making fudge, and he said, see, I told you that we could pray to have our house saved. And the whole neighborhood, we were stranded. The whole neighborhood was covered in ice. And so for about a week, everybody in my neighborhood in Meville, in that Peninsula Drive neighborhood, we knew it. All the adults, the kids, we all ice skated for a week. We were stranded by ice. But we knew we were in the middle of a miracle that we couldn't explain, and that changed my life.
Why did you become a teacher?
My mom was a teacher, and like I said, distant relatives were involved in Slippery Rock State Teacher College. And when I was in the Peace Corps, that was when they assigned. You know what? I actually wanted to go into government work always. But when I joined the Peace Corps, they turned me into a PE teacher in Venezuela in the Amazon, and it was 1968. And so they trained me to be a PE teacher and teach some of the Olympic sports, and I loved it. I didn't know much about PE, but I sure loved teaching, and I loved the kids. And so that just started it off. It was just like it was meant to be.
And you never looked back, did you?
No, it just, the doors opened. You know, it was like from the Peace Corps, then it was the Teacher Corps. That was automatically master degree, the automatic job with the city, and then boom, boom, boom. I started like teaching kindergarten, then first, second, third, fourth, fifth, which leads me into another segment of what I would really like to tell our listeners about what you discover when you're actually able to follow children from kindergarten to the eighth grade, what you see happening to them.
Sometimes growth, sometimes disaster.
If you're like you and me and you're blessed with brains and you're blessed with athletic ability or you're blessed with good looks, you're probably going to make it, and also blessed with good teachers. You're going to make it. You know, you're going to make it.
Well, I got one out of four.
Yeah, I think you did more than one. But if you're susceptible to suggestion and negative suggestion and you're fearful, what I saw was kids come in, like Robert Bly said, with this ball of light. They're filled, you know, kids are filled with light. They're joyful.
Yeah.
They're filled with the, what I, you know, you can't use the word spirit in a public school setting. You can't use the word soul. So what my friend Barbara and I did was we tried to come up with a new language, you know? So I came up with the idea of cosmic super self, because that brings in the idea of superhero. And that's what I saw. I saw that they come in filled with this inner superhero. Anything is possible, playfulness, love, joy. Well, they keep it to the third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. I love the sixth grade. That's when they last chance, really. And about the seventh grade, they begin to get scared and terrorized into, boy, you got to get into a really good high school. You got to pass these tests. You know, you got to be the smartest. You're going to have to get into a good college. You've got to get a scholarship. And they begin to lose their joy, and they begin to lose their superpowers, their divine superpowers, and they begin to become enslaved. And so I always taught Uncle Tom's Cabin, you know, for literature. And teaching that began to awaken me to the fact that I was in a kind of a cabin that most adults that have never spent their entire life watching kids go through public school could ever see. You know, you almost have to go through it with them to see what happens.
Is it true that most school districts just want to move kids along? Whoosh, get
I don't get think
him.
They want to. I think they're forced to.
By?
Well, when you have crowded classrooms and you have limited teachers, you can't keep a whole lot of kids back.
No.
You have to keep pushing them up, and there's a lot of pressure to look the other way. And it, you know, it's economics, it's politics.
Should you hold a kid back?
Well, that gets into the whole idea of evaluation and grading, you know, and I think
here's an example, Tom.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'll just use me as an example. When I was in high school, we had a kid in class who couldn't pass chemistry. He couldn't pass math. He was lousy in English. But you know what? When that kid was in auto shop,
right,
he was the best one in there.
Right.
He could take an engine apart with his eyes closed.
See, that was his bliss. That
I couldn't.
His, right.
You know what? I would look at what he was doing, and
right.
I would go, how do you do this? You know, the
right.
guy that would look at me in a math class and said, hey, George, can you help me out?
Right.
Was helping me in an auto class. And what I realized at a very young age is that we all have certain strengths and weaknesses.
We have our God-given talent.
Absolutely.
Right.
And schools should magnify that. You know, that poor kid.
You got it.
Who was failed in chemistry and math, had no business being in those classes. He should have been pushed along in his dexterity, in his auto mechanics.
Right.
And all those other things that he was brilliant at.
Right. That's it, exactly. Follow your bliss, like Joseph Campbell developed, that whole educational philosophy, that what's important, if a kid, like you just described, can find their talent, their passion, that's the important thing. It's like a flame that you want to, like, fan, and they shouldn't be held back because they don't know math. Math may not be in their, you know, in their DNA.
He had a spark plug taken out before he even knew what a spark plug was.
Right,
you
know? Right.
I mean, he was amazing.
Right, right. Hey, all kids, you know, what's the Bible say? Everybody's born with seven talents.
Yeah.
You know, we're supposed
by the
to
way,
find
I, I think he went off to form Firestone. I'm not sure.
Excellent.
He might have.
You know that movie, that Sandra Bullock movie that she just got the Academy Award for? That's all about that idea.
Well, let's get into something at the top of the hour, because you know something about some kind of secret report that you were reading in a superintendent's office. And I want you to tell us about what that is. You can, right?
Well, I can tell you part of it. Yes.
All right, part of it.
All right.
We're going to bend your arm for the other part. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.